Welcome back, everybody, to the Damage Report. We are now in the new year. Everything's gonna be way better, right? In 2019. Woo!
We're gonna change the show.
Our problems are gone.
It's no longer the Damage Report. It's the progress
report. The captain's report.
The progress report. Let's change it.
You may have solved my problem for when Bernie Sanders gets elected president. I've always wondered, what are we going
to
do?
I was thinking that because we were talking about how much damage is done. And I was like, what if damage stops being done to the country? What's John going to do with this show?
Here's the thing, though. Even if Bernie Sanders becomes president, there's a lot of damage. And I mean, look, here's the thing. And I've been telling people, like, I've been trying to get people to look past the sort of short-sighted ideas of how we're going to fix this thing. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, that we can just have Trump or whatever and it'll be cool. Like, so if we get Bernie Sanders, he is going to have a conservative majority in the Supreme Court that he's going to have to deal with, which means that they're theoretically going to strike down things that he does. Like, we've got issues outside of just electing the right president, unfortunately. So I feel confident that the branding of the show will work for a while.
Yeah. What about the JR Wednesdays? Should it be like JR Fridays or something like that?
I think it should continue to be Wednesdays, but you're going to have to figure out what that actually means. But while you're thinking about that, we've got a big show planned for you. Mitt Romney is still alive and still writing op-eds. We're going to break down what he said and why he said it. But there's much more important news going on. A tragic, either random or, you know, hate-fueled murder. We're going to be talking about that in the quest to find the murderer. We've got a vicious assault. I would argue, again, probably race-based in a McDonald's. We've got some video for you we're going to be showing a little bit later on. And we've also got Emma Vigeland joining us. Always great to have her. We didn't want to wait too long into the new year to bring her on. She's obviously been talking quite a bit about Elizabeth Warren's announced run for the presidency or the exploratory committee or whatever. She's running for the presidency. So she's going to be joining us near the end of the show, and we're going to be breaking down everything having to do with Elizabeth Warren, the pros and cons that she brings as a candidate, and the likely path that she faces. And also, by the way, we're now a couple of days into her, you know, candidacy, and so we get to see the attacks against her, not just like from Donald Trump, but Politico has weighed in. So we'll be talking about that with her a little bit later on. That said, why don't we jump right into the news? Mitt Romney is still around. It is 2019. I've nailed the year identification the first time that I had to do it so far in this year. But so he ran for the presidency a million years ago. But we love, you know, remixes of old stuff in America. So he is coming back around. He's going to be a senator, obviously. Now, he has written an op-ed in the Washington Post. Not a big fan of Donald Trump, apparently, although we're going to break down exactly what that means for a Republican senator who comes out against the president. But here's some of what he said. He says about Donald Trump, when he won the election, I hoped he would rise to the occasion. His early appointments of Rex Tillerson, Jeff Sessions, Nikki Haley, Gary Cohn, H.R. McMaster, Kelly, and Mattis were encouraging. But on balance, his conduct over the past 2 years, particularly his actions this month, is evidence that the president has not risen to the mantle of the office. Oh, damn. Harsh words.
Did he just realize this? Once you're elected to the Senate? But now that you're elected to the Senate, now you've realized what you didn't realize for the past 2 years. Because for the past 2 years, you've been roller coastering on this guy. Mm-hmm. We'll get to that, I'm sure.
We're going to have some of the back and forth. I'm sure that he has not liked Donald Trump at all. But what does it mean that he doesn't like Donald Trump? Because that's much more interesting and important than, is he coming out against Donald Trump? We've seen other Republican senators come out against Donald Trump, but what does it really mean? And before we get into more of his criticism of the president, I want to read where he agrees with the president, which is very important. Quote, he was right to align US corporate taxes with those of global competitors, to strip out excessive regulations, to crack down on China's unfair trade practices, to reform criminal justice, and to appoint conservative judges. Okay, so he didn't mention immigration there. But aside from that, aside from specifically talking about jailing toddlers or the wall, that's a lot of what Donald Trump has been doing. Mm-hmm. So I guess you disagree with Donald Trump, but when it comes to the policy, you're just admitting, yeah, I would have pretty much done a lot of what he did.
Yeah, he goes through policies that he agreed with Trump on, which things that he thinks, for some reason, most Americans are on board with Trump on, despite how he's acting. So he wanted to draw this line between. There's policies that are still Republican that he's all about, but it's just the way he likes to say things and do things, and his temperament is where his problem lies. If you actually want to have any kind of a separation from the guy, you have to point out the things about his agenda and his policies that you don't agree with. And it's okay to say, hey, you know what? I wasn't for separating kids at the border. You can say that and still be a Republican. Mm-hmm. But he's not able to break that part yet. Mm-hmm. He still doesn't think he's able to. He's still working within these strings.
Yeah, so far, and we're going to read more of the criticism, but to me, having read the criticism, and you can see it at the Washington Post, the difference between them is that Donald Trump is this, and Mitt Romney's this. And that's it. That's seemingly like, yeah, okay, if you're listening to podcasts, you don't know what I just did. But it's basically, I speak with longer words, but I agree with everything. You know, destroying all these protections for people, screwing people over, giving a whole bunch of money to rich people. I agree with all of that. Maybe I'm opposed to the gassing toddlers and things like that, but I'm not even gonna say that part.
Nope.
You can infer that I'm against tear gassing kids, but I won't actually say it. So here's more of his actual criticism. To a great degree, a presidency shapes the public character of the nation. A president should unite us and inspire us to follow, quote, our better angels. A president should demonstrate the essential qualities of honesty and integrity and elevate the national discourse with comedy and mutual respect. With a nation so divided, resentful, and angry, presidential leadership and qualities of character is indispensable. And it is in this province where the incumbent's shortfall has been most glaring. Now, if you're watching the video of this, you were just seeing the graphic, but to really understand what he's saying there, he has to read it while doing this. Because that's all it is in the quote is, I'm more like Kennedy than Trump. I guess.
I can put a shiny gloss over the garbage that we keep throwing out there. So again, this can be clearly characterized as this is the Republican Party. They believe everything that Donald Trump believes in and everything that he does. They just don't like the way he says it because he's way too transparent with being an a-hole about it. Mm-hmm. So we're all a-holes. We just can't say it the way he does. We like to gloss it and make sure you're fooled by it.
Yeah. Yeah, and by the way, if you're a Republican politician watching this, which seems unlikely, but it could happen, and you feel that we're being unfair, if you feel like the policy disagreements between you and Donald Trump are more significant, say it. Describe the actual differences. Like, I'm not one of those people who thinks that criticizing Donald Trump's rhetoric or whatever is nothing. I think it's something, mm-hmm. but it's almost nothing. It's almost nothing in comparison to actually standing against him. Like, so for instance, Jeff Flake has criticized Trump many times. John McCain gave the thumbs down on getting rid of the ACA. So look, the thumbs down is worth a million critical tweets. It's not everything, and yes, John McCain would go along with a lot of Donald Trump's agenda as well. But actually opposing him on a judge or on a bill is worth a million of those.
Absolutely. Flake did a little bit of that. He was hurdles. He threw some hurdles in the way of Trump and his agenda on some of those things for a second on Kavanaugh. So he was a nuisance. And as you said, John McCain, policy-wise, he went against him a few times. What happened to all those guys? Jeff Flake is no longer retiring. I'm forgetting the other senator who was working with Flake a lot of times, and he spoke out specifically against some policies. Retired. Yeah. They know they're leaving, so now they can go against certain policies.
Yeah.
When you're gonna stay in, you can't go against policies. You just have to go against the way he talks bad about.
Maybe Mitt Romney will defy that. His last comment: I remain optimistic about our future. In an innovation age, Americans excel. More importantly, noble instincts live in the hearts of Americans. The people of this great land will eschew the politics of anger and fear if they are summoned to the responsibility by leaders in homes, in churches, in schools, in businesses, in government, who raise our sights and respect the dignity of every child of God. The ideal that is the essence of America.
He didn't say anything.
And that is why I am running for president in 2020. Because I have to assume all of that BS is setting up a primary challenge, I guess.
He's floating it.
Maybe 2022. Maybe he's looking ahead, I guess that's not a presidential election, but maybe he's not gonna primary him. But all of this is, I'm awesome. Here's why I'm awesome, because you get your tax cuts, but I don't tweet in all caps, I guess. I guess that's what we're hearing. Now, really fast, it's one thing for him to say he's against Donald Trump, but earlier when Donald Trump tweeted this in February of last year, Mitt Romney has announced he is running for the Senate from the wonderful state of Utah. He will make a great senator and worthy successor to Orrin Hatch and has my full support and endorsement. Mitt Romney punched him in the face with this tweet. Thank you, Mr. President, for the support. I hope that over the course of the campaign, I also earn the support and endorsement of the people of Utah. He also, of course, sat with him at that embarrassing dinner, the photo of which is available online.
Trump said he got on his knees for the endorsement. I mean, come on.
I mean, and they've attacked each other back and forth. But at a certain point, if you won't back it up with action, I don't care about what you say. One other just quick mention. I just love this. So Ronna McDaniel, a GOP chairwoman, tweeted this about Romney's thing. POTUS is attacked and obstructed by the MSM media and Democrats 24/7. For an incoming Republican freshman senator to attack real Donald Trump as their first act feeds into what the Democrats and the media want. It is disappointing and unproductive. And what I love about that is that's his niece.
Absolutely.
Referring to the Republican nominee for the presidency 6 years ago or 7 years ago now as the incoming Republican freshman senator. She's a Romney. That is just amazing. Like if, okay, there's like putting part, like country above party. Mm-hmm. There's also sort of a family thing. And man, she is all in on Donald Trump.
A lot of these politicians and figures like this continue to break this whole family thing. And how much, we need to coalesce around our families. When this guy goes after, the president goes after anyone mm-hmm. in your family, or someone says anything slightly critical about him, it is break with that family. That family means nothing to
exactly.
you anymore. I can't wait for him to go after Mike Huckabee and see what Sarah Huckabee Sanders has to say.
Yeah, that is going to be an awkward Easter dinner. Anyway, we're going to take our first break. When we come back, the extremely tragic case of Jasmine Barnes, killed by someone who has not yet been caught. We're going to break down all the details after.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called The Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of The Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
you must unlearn what you have learned.
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Welcome back to the Damage Report, everybody. Lots to get to, but before we get back to the news, I do want to give you a little bit of homework. Don't do this right now. Keep watching the show. But as soon as the show is over, here is something it is very vital that you do. As of right now, as of this morning, we found out that although we had earlier been told it would not happen, Nancy Pelosi has apparently decided to push for PAYGO being added to the House rules for the incoming Democratic majority, which effectively means that all the big progressive priorities, we just can't afford it under this new rule. So there is an attempt to stop that from being added to the House rules. There are 18 no votes that are going to be needed in the very near future. And so far, two congresspeople have decided to vote no. You probably haven't heard of them. It's Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Ro Khanna. They've both been on the show. They're awesome, but they need help. We need 16 more no votes. And there are a lot of great incoming, especially progressive congressmen and women who could vote no against this. But they might need a little bit of pushing. Ryan Grimm, who's been on the show as well, he's said he's talked with at least five that he's not naming that are considering voting no. How about we put some social media pressure on them? So track down these progressives in Congress, tweet at them, hashtag PAYGO. Put pressure on as many people as possible to make sure that during this critical period where their vote has not happened yet, we make sure that we strip PAYGO, which is designed, I could say accidentally or intentionally, but it's intentionally to stop progressive priorities from being passed by the new House majority.
It's a good thing that this blue wave hit the House, Because then at least, you know, some progressive policies can be put in place right away. And you know what? And the president is worried about all the investigations and things. We got to make sure the Democrats didn't go too hard against the president, you know. So I think they've got off to a really good progressive start here.
Yeah. Yeah, well, we could. There is still time. So look, more progressives won than in any election in my lifetime. Strong progressives who are making huge waves around the country. And this PAYGO thing is like the old guard saying, it's like their trial balloon, like, hey, I wonder how influential they'll be. Okay, well, here's the thing. This is the first day in prison, and apparently I've heard from TV and movies, you need to punch them in the face on day one. I'm Prison John. Let's do that, okay? And they need a little bit of a push to get them to do that. Some, thankfully, we've given credit to Ro Khanna and AOC have already done that, but others need a little bit of pressure. So you can provide that. That's your homework for today. Now, with that said, let's jump back into serious news. Thanks to the incredible social media advocacy and work of Sean King, I was made aware of an absolutely tragic murder recently. If we bring up this tweet, this is where I originally saw it from Sean King. Urgent, all hands on deck, a 40-year-old white man with a beard in a red pickup truck pulled up on 7-year-old Jasmine Barnes and her family near a Houston Walmart and shot and killed her and injured others. I am joining the search for a killer and have a $25,000 reward. Need him now. A civil rights attorney has since joined with Sean King, making the reward now $35,000. So this killer, by the way, as we continue with this, is still on the loose as of us filming this. But we do know a little bit about what happened in the situation thanks to interviews with Jasmine's mother, LaPortia Washington, who said, as I turned around and looked back at the street, this is during the attack, I heard shots start firing and they came through my window, broke my glass and hit me in my arm. They sped off in front of us and the truck slowed down and continued to fire as he was in front of us. Washington told CNN that she threw her body over her eldest daughter in the front passenger seat and told her other three daughters to get down. But once the shooting was over, one of her other daughters discovered that 7-year-old Jasmine was dead. She had been shot in the head, either randomly from this psychopath, or possibly, I mean, it could be a hate crime. It could be some sort of race-based thing. But in any event, the person is currently unaccounted for. There is some information, as we've shown you, a little bit of a description, some idea of what the vehicle is like, but still no idea of who this person is. And so that is why Sean King, the civil rights lawyer, are looking for information, as of course the police are as well.
I mean, it continues. It's what a horrible way to start some news at the beginning of the year. And not that this is anything different or new. But I mean, again, we're in an information age where more people can get a chance to find things out. We know Sean King was all over assailants there in Charlottesville. Mm-hmm. Am I right?
Yeah. And tracked some of them down. And in other instances
as well.
Got some
fired, others arrested for the assaults they're pulling. So that's the only hopeful moment you have in going to something like this. And, you know, to find out what the motive is, and then also make sure this guy goes to prison the rest of his life. So, I don't know, it's hard to connect it to the temperature and the I guess the anger that's going on in the country right now, but that's, you can't help but to connect it to mm-hmm. that. Like, now we continue to downplay and disregard the lives of certain children. Mm-hmm. And it's just this kind of stark. You don't see this happening to certain other folks. So when you talk about drive-bys, you know, everybody, we sensationalize and talk about how much drive-bys, and we connect that to these black thugs and gangs mm-hmm. historically. This thug drove up on a family together going shopping and just opened fire.
Yeah, five women.
For whatever reason, because he's a garbage person.
Yeah.
And I would love to see the president come out and start tweeting about this. He'll tweet about a murder of a single person and how we need to make sure these people come to justice. I would love to see some kind of act of showing how we need to do something different here. Because yeah. We always talk about how it comes from the top. If there's a certain tone and character that comes from the top of our country about certain folks, people that are willing to be your foot soldiers will do things. Again, I'm not making the direct connection, but it's easy to do it when you don't think anybody's gonna care.
Yeah.
We gotta show them that we care about this.
Well, look, and honestly, that's one of the reasons why I'm so glad that Sean and others online have been spreading information about Jasmine and her killing, because I didn't see it on any of the news sites that I go to. And by the way, I have an RSS feed that has a lot of them, big ones, little ones, and I didn't really see anything about this. So thankfully there is social media to help fill in the gaps. Now, as you were just trying to figure out, you know, to some extent, what could lead a person to theoretically do this, obviously the family who was affected by this thinking about that as well. We have some video. This is of LaPortia, the mother of Jasmine. it's difficult to watch, but in this interview, you'll see she's still in the hospital, obviously, because she was shot as well, trying to work through what happened to her and her family.
I replayed this moment in my head over a million times to see, did I cut this man off? Did I make a wrong turn in front of him? Did I stop him from getting out of the Walmart for whatever he was doing? Did I do anything wrong to cause this man to fire shots in my car? And I did it. I didn't do anything. I didn't make a wrong turn. I didn't get over in his lane. I didn't do none of that. He fired off at us for no reason. None.
So now look where we are. Now look where we are. Now, this mother who lost her daughter and had to jump in front of her other daughter and
shield her with her body
and ready to take bullets in her back or wherever over it, now is running in her mind what she did wrong. So if you cut him off, if you impeded his way of getting out of the Walmart, if you drove by and flicked him off, none of it should cause him to do this. Mm-hmm. But that's running in her mind now. What did I do to potentially cause my daughter to get shot by this madman?
Yeah.
What did I do? Now she's left with that burden and that.
Well, thankfully, she seems to have accepted that she is not responsible.
But she had to sit and think about it.
She does
a million times.
Yeah.
That thought should never cross your mind. There should be a, you know what? I'm sick of this. Should be the things that she's able to say. Instead, she has to go, what? How was this my fault that this white dude came up and rolled up and shot up my entire family?
Yeah.
What did I do wrong?
Yeah,
nothing, man. You
didn't
do anything wrong.
Exactly. Yeah. She didn't do anything wrong. There is an opportunity, though, if you're watching this, for you to do something right. The family has set up a GoFundMe page. If we could bring up this graphic, you're going to see a link to it is GoFundMe.com/justice for my daughter Jasmine with dashes between the words. Raising money for obvious both the continuing health expenses of the family who survived but were shot and horribly injured in this attack. Also funeral and all of that. As of us filming it, it raised something like $14,000. I personally think in America we can do a lot better than that. When I think about some of the other GoFundMes that I've seen for far less worthy causes than the family who's been affected by this unimaginable tragedy.
If you can't help with the GoFundMe, go to the GoFindHim.
Yeah, exactly.
GoFindHim.
Yeah, I mean, look, there are other people in that area that might recognize this truck, that might know that based on the description of the guy. It is possible they could track him down, and you know, fingers crossed that they do, that we get some justice here. Okay, let's turn, you know, actually, we're gonna pause before going to our next story. We're gonna take our break just a little bit early. When we come back on the other side, another terrible attack, this time in a McDonald's, and then an update on a story we talked about last year, a sheriff who has been horribly mistreating his inmates to pull in gigantic sums of cash for himself after this. Welcome back to the show, everybody. Just a little bit later on in the next block, Emma Vigeland of Rebel HQ is gonna be joining us to break down all of the news and attacks against Elizabeth Warren since she announced she'd be running for the presidency. So stick around for that. But in this block, we've got some video for you. Tape of a recorded assault inside of a McDonald's is just dreadful. Not only because of the actual attack, but because of how people around reacted to it. So let's play the video and then respond.
John!
So there you have a white customer at McDonald's reaching across the divider and pulling this black woman's shirt because of a problem with his order. So there's a lot of issues there. First off, I do want to acknowledge she was not the one to pull. She defends herself.
Sadly, she had to, you know?
She did have to.
Yeah, and then after you get snatched, and then he's at the end, there's so many things to go through on this. At the end, he says, you know, she needs to be fired. Yeah, you're gonna be fired over.
He assaulted her.
No, so you see how violently he snatches her towards the counter, runs her legs into the back of the counter, so she has to at least get him off of her. Everyone's so calm.
Yeah, there's a lot of people on that side of the divider.
Hey, calm down. Can you stop? Hey, stop, sir. Hey, and then after getting a few shots.
So they're pulling her away. The guy's still holding on to her, by the way. He's still holding her during all of this.
You can see how she's leaning
backwards. It's not like she hits back and he starts pushing her away. Yep. He's still trying to pull her over the divider.
So here comes his finger snapping for the manager in the shirt and tie to come over and then check his receipt.
The manager checks the receipt.
Hey, sir, you just assaulted my employee. Let me check your receipt and see why there was no cheese on your hamburger.
Yeah, what did you think you were going to find on the receipt that would warrant ignoring his assault of your employee?
Sorry.
If I went into a McDonald's and I ordered stuff, and it comes out, and it was literally just a big pile of dog crap. You don't assault anyone. What, was there too much salt? I mean, look, obviously we're joking around. He thought he could get away with it because it's a woman and she's black.
Absolutely. And that's the thing. She's the fact that she has to be prepared to defend herself like that all the time is illustrative of what we do with black women in our society. She knows that she has no one else to defend her. She knows no one else is gonna be there for her. And then after saying all that, she has to continue to be this wall. Guarantee you, that's a scary thing to go through. But no one is gonna have that empathy for her. Yeah. And be like, oh yeah, you know, even people who are praising her for getting those couple shots in on him, which were grazing because of how he's snatching on her, they're like, oh, good job on her for getting at him. It's like, you know what, she shouldn't have to. That's a scary thing to go through. You get snatched like that, and now you have to do something about it. No, she's not a badass. No, she's not like, she's not this tough. She is, but she shouldn't have to be.
Well, because the thing is, like, when he pulls her, he could have a knife. He could have a gun.
This is in Florida.
That could have been the prelude to murder.
This is in Florida. And then he'll say, oh, she attacked me, and I was defending myself. You know, she got my hamburger order wrong. And
well, the tape is very clear.
And again,
he attacked her.
Because of the history of what we've seen, judicially and also in society-wise, he would say all that and be like, they'll let me go because I'm me and she's her.
Yeah.
That's all there is to it. He's been conditioned to believe that that's going to fly, and we have to change that.
Yeah, and by the way, if they fire her, oh my God, don't go to that McDonald's anymore. I mean, you can make the decision whether you want to go to any McDonald's. They're independently owned and all that, but no, that McDonald's needs to be boycotted because she did exactly the right thing.
He needs to be arrested and found and arrested.
That's true as well. And the thing is, in that video, you can very clearly see his face, let alone the security cameras and all that. They know exactly who he is. They have his credit card information probably.
And sadly, the people who didn't help her and defend her are probably worried about their jobs and their freedom as well. Because if one of those other employees run around the corner and grabbed him by his neck like you should have, if that's your little sister, and snatch him and throw him on the ground like he should have, he'd be fired, arrested, and all that.
Yeah. Yes, you're 100% right. I mean, the problem is all of them are thinking, we work for a major corporation. We are treated like insects, like garbage. The customer is always right. Even if the customer is assaulting us right now, the customer is right to do this. I won't be specific at all, but I know like people who work at restaurants in LA that people call them up and like want a reservation or something like that. And there's just no space. So they begin berating, yelling at the employee. And the thing is, the employee knows the managers are gonna side with the customer no matter what. We have trained customers that you are right, attack our worthless garbage employees all you want. We're gonna side with you because we are terrified that you're gonna write a bad Yelp review or something like that.
With someone else that the work minimum wage because we don't treat anyone with any kind of respect.
Yeah, so this is not a separate thing from all the other issues with labor and.
Yeah.
This is like inevitable 2019 capitalism. That you can attack employees in McDonald's, and so far you probably end up being okay. Okay, with that, we are gonna take a break. We come back and Mavigilin's gonna be joining us. Elizabeth Warren now running for the presidency. What's gonna happen to her? We'll break that down after this. Welcome back to the show, everyone. Very excited. We did not wait very long in 2019 before we'll be joined once again by Emma Vigilin of Rebel HQ. Emma, welcome to the show.
John, thanks for having me. Sorry if I sound a little weird. I am sick as a dog.
Okay. You know what? The last time we saw you, Emma, you were sick as a dog. What's going on?
I guess I just have a really weak immune system. Different one. That was the stomach flu. Now I just have severe throat awfulness.
Oh, geez. Okay. By the way, I noticed that you said sick as a dog. You're starting to remind me of Donald Trump constantly attacking dogs. I don't understand why.
Look, I love dogs, so.
So, Emma, I don't know if you are aware, Elizabeth Warren is running for president. Had you heard that?
Really? Mm-hmm. Jeez, this is breaking news.
It's breaking news here on the Damage Report. So look, I want to break it down with you. I know that you're obviously going to have a lot to say about Elizabeth Warren and probably about the primary as well, I would imagine. What do you think as a candidate? First of all, are you surprised at all? How much doubt was there that she would actually run?
I'm not surprised. Look, I think that she should run. She's one of the most high profile candidates in the country, and excluding anyone who has actually run for president, she has an extremely high favorability rating and high visibility in the Democratic Party, so she should run. She has come through on Herculean accomplishments, like this single-handedly pushing forth the CFPB in a time when both parties really were trying to water down all reform after the financial collapse. She has gotten into very public tussles with Donald Trump, which has increased her visibility. And obviously, I think she's the most second most progressive senator in the country. So I see her as an excellent candidate.
So we're going to return to the topic of her tussles with Donald Trump. But so you mentioned a few there of her pros. What other pros, and also what cons do you see her possessing as a candidate that might influence her chances in what's probably going to be an extremely packed field?
So her pros are that she is arguably the most anti-Wall Street candidate in the entire field. I don't see how anyone can claim that they're more aggressive towards Wall Street than Elizabeth Warren. This is her bread and butter. This is how she got into the Senate. And she has had viral clips of her going after CEOs, the Wells Fargo CEO most notably, and holding them accountable and holding their feet to the fire. I also think she has a very strong record on healthcare. Now, she's a co-sponsor for Medicare for All, has been one of the earliest co-sponsors, is for marijuana legalization, jumpstarting prison reform. But I think her weaknesses in terms of the progressive field is the fact that she voted for the $700 billion defense package. A lot of progressives don't like that. She has a blind spot, many think, in terms of foreign policy. That $700 billion defense package was even more than Donald Trump asked for. So it's a bit perplexing why she voted for it. And also the fact, of course, that she didn't endorse Bernie Sanders in 2016. I might be gleaning too much from the Twitterverse, but there are a lot of progressives that still haven't forgiven her for that. I think it's silly, but you know, that's the narrative that's going to persist. No pun intended.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, look, at the time I wanted her to, and I guess it theoretically could have helped, but I'm not exactly sure exactly how it would have helped. It wasn't like he needed more proof that he's a progressive. I mean, it could have swung a few votes, but the thing is, all of those primaries were proportional in allocation of delegates. So it's not like putting him slightly above would have tipped, you know, would have made a huge difference. So I understand if people would have liked to have seen that from her in terms of influencing their view of Elizabeth Warren. I don't know. I don't know how much it should matter now, but some people probably will still be angry about that. Now I am curious. I mean, we can talk about her odds. If there's anything that's reliable, it's polling 2 years out from an election. And in those polls, so far, she's not doing amazingly. Like, she's bested by, you know, people like Bernie, obviously, but also Beto recently, and Biden, and in some cases, Kamala Harris and others. She's usually right around there. If the crowd does get really full with either progressives or people who are pitching themselves as progressives, do you think that she'll have trouble standing out from that pack?
I do. I think that's going to be her biggest problem, is that she's tried to kind of toe this line between being a more traditional politician and still being a progressive. She's a progressive. I've seen some tweets about this in the more traditional sense, where Bernie Sanders is more of a democratic socialist and a different kind of progressive than we've seen. And she is as progressive as it can get, really, within the confines of the Democratic Party as it stands now. But she's tried to ride that line. That's part of why she didn't endorse Bernie Sanders in 2016. She wanted to be in the fold of the Hillary Clintonites and the establishment people. And the fact that she was a woman not endorsing the female candidate for president, she took that very seriously, I think too seriously. But it should be noted that she was the only female Democratic senator who didn't endorse for a while. She basically waited till the primary was virtually over. Yeah. I think that signals some political cowardice, but not to relitigate 2016. I think she's an excellent candidate. And I think actually the more people hear about her Wall Street fights, the fact that she's taken on the big banks so aggressively, the more her favorability may increase. I know that's different than what happens typically with a lot of presidential candidates, but most of the general public knows her for her tussles with Trump over her Native American heritage and Pocahontas, et cetera, the horrific ways that Trump refers to her. And I think once her platform and her actual record gets out there, then maybe that could change.
Emma, so I guess this is with her being the first that's doing the exploratory committee and to run and everything. I always worry if someone's the first one to come out, there's more time for everyone to pick them apart and break them down. Is this strategy to try and get ahead of everything, to have your name out there first because there's going to be such a crowded field? Or do you think it's helpful that she's doing it this way? Because I'm not really sure which way is going to work for her.
You know, I don't know. This is such a new world. It's really hard for me to say if it's a benefit or if it's a disadvantage. And I think we're going to only know once we can play Monday morning quarterback and see if this ended up working for her and if she exceeds expectations. So my very boring answer is I don't know. But I do know that Politico put out an article where they were describing her as aloof and cold, and if she can overcome that perception. And I found that to be quite interesting. So the mainstream media attacks are already going after her. Elizabeth Warren, a lot of people on Twitter noted, including Roland Martin, saying she's not cold. She's very warm and she's very sweet. And I don't know why Politico is choosing to go after her.
Yeah.
I mean, we do know they're all for the establishment, but it should also be noted that Bernie Sanders is notably gruff with the press. I've heard some things that Elizabeth Warren is not as big of a fan of the mainstream press, which makes sense. But Bernie Sanders articles aren't written about him in Politico saying, can he overcome his nature where he's a bit testy with reporters?
Yeah.
Right. I think that's some unknowingly sexist framing, to be frank.
Yeah, the thing I worry about is I don't know if Politico knows that they are continuing a longstanding sort of misogynistic way of dealing with female politicians. They may not be aware that they're doing that. But as you point out, of course, jokes aside, the war on progressives continues. Politico is going to have a lot of editorials, not just on Elizabeth Warren, but as the others come out. We will see when Biden announces how critical they will be about his, you know, gaffes or whatever you would attack him on. We will see if they're as critical as they are with Elizabeth Warren. I did want to ask you about some other news that's out there. Had you seen the Nancy Pelosi, the PAYGO switch up?
Yes, I have. I mean, this has been in the works for a while. Nancy Pelosi has said that she wants PAYGO to be instated and that all legislation has to meet those standards, which is maddening because Republicans don't hold themselves to that standard, but somehow Democrats have to be the ones that are now fiscally responsible when Republicans play by an entirely different set of rules and then claim to be fiscally responsible and then get political points for being fiscally responsible. It's completely outrageous. I don't know if you want to explain more about what PAYGO is.
Well, we've previously talked about it a few times on the show. But what I am hoping for right now is I know that there's pressure on a good number of progressives in Congress to vote against this. And so far, only Ro Khanna and AOC have announced that they will actually vote against it. Do you have any confidence that 16 other votes will come about to stop this from going into effect?
I don't, unfortunately. I think that a lot of the party has internalized a lot of the right-wing framing, which is that Democrats are loose with the dollars and that Republicans are the ones that really know how to run the country like a business, and they're not going to spend all this money. It's the exact opposite, especially when it comes to these rules. So Democrats overcompensate time and time again. And maybe it's even more insidious than that. Maybe this is an effort to handcuff progressives like Ro Khanna and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez from pursuing bolder legislative priorities that would require more money, because Pelosi does not want to upset the donors. If we know one thing about Nancy Pelosi, she's a prolific fundraiser, yeah, as Politico would frame it in their objective articles. So, you know, that's why she has the position that she has, even though her popularity is incredibly weak and associating her with the Democratic Party is only a political liability. They are obsessed with fundraising, and that's why they're instituting PAYGO. They want donors to still flock to the party, and progressives coming in saying we want to pursue more expensive, bolder legislation that might tax the rich and corporations is a threat to that donor flow.
Yeah. Yeah, that's my fear too. But I do think it's fair to say that we should only stop global climate change and save our civilization if it's deficit neutral. What a ridiculous way to govern, Jesus. Anyway, dealing with Nancy Pelosi's priorities is gonna be an ongoing problem for us throughout the year. I wish we had more time, but thank you for joining us and breaking down the news.
Yes, thanks, John. Thanks for having me, MJR too.
Anytime. Sure. We're gonna take a short break. We come back, one more topic for you, only a few minutes remain, but we'll see what we can do. Welcome back to the show, everyone. We have saved the most important news for last. We're gonna respond to Trump's first tweet of the year. Okay, so it is a new year. Trump is on Twitter. This is an opportunity for a new restrained Generation 2 Trump. He's now gonna be facing a Democratic Congress. Is he gonna change up his style, perhaps? Communicate, try to bring people over, exude more of that Mitt Romney Republican style. Let's see with his first tweet of 2019. Happy New Year to everyone, including the haters in the fake news media. It's all in caps, by the way, if you're listening to the podcast. 2019 will be a fantastic year for those not suffering from Trump derangement syndrome. Just calm down and enjoy the ride. Great things are happening for our country. And let me just start off by saying that what I love is to be told to just calm down and enjoy the ride by a guy who's been credibly accused of sexual assault by many, many women. Jesus. Just that was all in all caps. Now, to be fair, that was not actually his first tweet. It was something about Seb Gorka, but that's boring. This is the second tweet.
This is the one he meant.
This is how he, at 7:08 a.m., greets the new year.
That's what's on his mind. This is a tortured soul, let me tell you. There's nothing else he can do. At least when I woke up on New Year's morning, I mean, after I'd gone to bed on New Year's morning, then you wake up and go, oh, I'm gonna go outside and experience my first fresh air of the new year. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking positively. I'm having a good day.
Yeah.
I don't know how you wake up and the only thing you can do is go to your phone and get to tweeting in all caps about the haters and the fake news media. Fake news media said nothing to you. Mm-hmm. The Washington Examiner and Fox News didn't say anything to you. So I don't know why he's going after people so much, but like just relax, enjoy your day. You're still the president for now. And we're just taking it for a second. It's like there's derangement going on. Talk about Trump derangement syndrome lives within his brain.
Yeah, it's the new year. The fake news. Rachel Maddow's at brunch. Okay, Haley Jackson slept in. They're not reporting on you right now, you weirdo. I don't care what happens to Donald Trump. I don't care if he goes crazy. But if you did care about him, advise him to watch less Fox News in the morning, because it does to him exactly what it does to every old white male with, you know, coronary problems in the country. It drives them insane.
Yeah.
I'm gonna mention just briefly, Brooke had mentioned to me, she read an awesome interview with a female cable like installation person who once was at a family where the wife was begging her to fix their cable because Fox News was out. And if the husband doesn't get his Fox News, he yells at her instead of the TV. That woman was Melania Trump. No, I'm kidding. But it was, this is a real issue and people expose themselves to it. And so this is my lesson for New Year's. Donald Trump has gone insane, he's gone, forget about him. But for you, while we do have to stay engaged, that's what the Damage Report is all about, is addressing the news head on every day. Don't destroy your brain over it, okay? You have to have just a little bit of relaxation, go to brunch, maybe sleep in a little bit, take care of yourself.
When fear drives you, you need to keep feeding it or else you don't feel right. So countdown until the days until the Damage Report changes to the Progress Report. As things get better, we're gonna go to progress.
I hope someday we get to do that. And if we do, you get to hold the scissors as we like open up the new studio or something like that. Anyway, thank you so much for joining me on the show. By the way,
first one of the year.
First one of the year, the first guest of the year. Hashtag PayGo, tweet about it, put pressure on Democratic representatives to stop PayGo from going into effect, please. And we'll be here tomorrow with much more for you.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.